From the Goodnight Scholarships Office at NC State University, I'm Anthony Olaya Wright, and this is Have a Good Night. On this episode, I sat down with Alexa Hadley and Bryce Scott and talked about their travels to Alaska for an alternative service break trip, chicken sandwiches, balls of gas, and community values, substitute teaching, and the importance of expanding your cultural understanding of the world around you. Without further ado, let's get into the episode. Okay. Rank these burger places in order of best to worst burger. We'll do Wendy's, McDonald's, and Burger King.
I'm going to have to go McDonald's first. I guess. I don't really like burgers from any of these places, but I'll go McDonald's first. And then Wendy's, and then Burger King. I just am not a Burger King girl.
Burger King last.
I just can't get behind it. I like their chicken sandwich, but not their burgers.
Bryce, what about you?
So I don't know if my ranking is going to count, because the reason why I rank McDonald's as number one is because of the McChicken. Yeah. And I don't know if that's a burger or not. I think it's a chicken burger, but you guys would say chicken sandwich. But if I can't choose the McChicken, I'm still choosing McDonald's, not because it's a good burger, because it only costs like $1.50. So the amount of like taste you get per dollar is better than the other options. That's why I prefer McDonald's. Then it would be Burger King after that, and then Wendy's last. I've only had Wendy's, I think, twice, and it was bad both times. So that's why it's last. There's no real reason.
Wendy's is a very salty burger. Like Alexa, I haven't had a McDonald's burger since my senior year of high school. And so like, jeez. I used to be like a chunkier kid, but we would eat out a lot. So like, I made a point, I was like, hey, I'm cutting out pork. I'm cutting out like specifically fast food burgers and Taco Bell. I used to tear some Taco Bell up. Number six, beef supreme with nacho cheese and a small soft shell taco on the side. With a mango frutista?
Oh, wow.
Like, crazy. But yeah, okay. Burger King would have been number one for me because I did love the Whopper. McDonald's two, and then Wendy's number three. So we're not too far off. And clearly all of us have non-burger taste with the McChicken and Alexa just not eating anything at all from these burgers. Thank you all for joining us on the Have a Good Night podcast. We're just going to start things off, and I know you all have different majors. I'm pretty positive you all have different majors. Bryce, since Alexa started us off with the burger ranking, you start us off with, tell us how you got to Good Night and your journey here.
Yeah, sure. So I'm an international student. So when I first came to the US, I went to a community college in Greensboro, actually. Had no idea that the Goodnight Scholarship existed, anything like that. I always wanted to go to NC State since I had a cousin who came to NC State. So it was always on the horizon. But, you know, I didn't really think about it, and I didn't really have that many realistic ways to get here. So I just went through community college, you know, trying my best. And then I actually had a professor who was a Goodnight himself. I think he was in the 2008 class or something, one of the really early classes. And yeah, he told me about the program and knew I wanted to go to NC State, knew I wanted to study aerospace. He also studied aerospace. And he told me I should apply for the program. So I looked into it, and it didn't really say anything about international students, but I ended up emailing Jocelyn, and she said I can apply. And there were some forms I had to submit because I'm an international student, but submitted all the forms, wrote the essays, did the interview, and here I am. What is it, 2 years in now?
Yeah. Turn up. Yeah. What was the, do you remember the professor's name?
Yeah. So his name is Dr. Forrest Kidd, and he went to NC State for undergrad, and then he got a PhD in aerospace engineering in Michigan, I think. Mm. And now he works at A&T as a professor. So.
Wow. That's really tight. Shout out to Dr. Kidd.
Yeah.
Alexa, your turn.
Okay. Well, I first found out about it originally from my high school civics teacher. She went to State. She was in Kappa Delta, and she knew of, well, I had told her that I had been applying to a couple scholarships, and she told me that I should check out Goodnight, and I hadn't heard about it. And then like 2 days later, I swear I got the invitation. And so I checked it out, applied for it. Here we are. I didn't think I qualified for it originally, because I knew I was elementary ed and I knew I had signed up for STEM, but I didn't know that if that was like qualifying enough, to be in Goodnight. But I found out that I did. So I applied for it. And then, I found out one of my teachers at my school was a Goodnight, Miss Olivia Shiot. And yeah, here we are. But it was a pretty regular journey, I would say.
So. Shout out to Goodnight educators putting people on through a little word of mouth situation. And clearly you both have very different majors. Elementary ed, aerospace. I guess like for you, Alexa, like what made you want to go that route?
Well, at my dance studio I grew up at, they had this leadership assistant program, and you started training when you were like 11, and they kind of just like stick you in different classes and you just assist the teacher with whatever you need. But over the course of going through the program, you get to work with kids of all ages. And I didn't really realize I wanted to be a teacher until like junior year of high school. And at that point I had spent like already like 5 years in the program. And I just really enjoyed working with kids. But I also had like a family friend that I would consider a mentor, and she was an elementary school teacher, and she had just always told me stories about just like her working in school, and I just always thought that they were fun, and I always pictured myself doing something like that. But more than just being a teacher, I just want to help people in any sort of capacity. So yeah,
that's awesome. And then Bryce, you for aerospace.
Yeah, so I'd like to say I wanted to be an aerospace engineer, you know, my whole life, but that would be a lie. When I was a kid, I learned quite a bit about the constellations and things like that. My grandmother was a professor, and she used to teach me about that kind of stuff. And then I kind of found out that people could go to space, and I thought that was the coolest thing ever. So I decided I wanted to be an astronaut. And that was when I was young, so that was kind of like a kid's dream. Then I realized what it actually takes to be an astronaut, and I thought, there's no way, I don't want to do that. And then, you know, throughout kind of high school and things like that, I dabbled in many different things. Wanted to be a lawyer at one point, a pharmacist at one point. Then I discovered engineering, and I originally wanted to do industrial engineering. And I did some factory tours. I shadowed some industrial engineers, and I did like a school project on it. And I thought it was really cool. But then I came over to America and I started studying, you know, actual engineering. And I, you know, no shame on industrial engineers at all, but I kind of wanted to do something a little more technical related. So then I shifted into computer engineering, which is it's basically half of electrical engineering and half of computer science. And it's incredibly broad. So you can do whatever you want, really. And at this time I was, you know, messing around with some electronics and making some projects of my own, things like that. But I took a couple of coding classes and realized I really didn't like coding too much, and that I didn't want to do that as my job forever. So then I thought of doing mechanical and specializing in aerospace, but NC State has aerospace as a major itself. So that's kind of what I set my sights on. And kind of linking back to the original goal of wanting to be an astronaut, I don't want to be an astronaut anymore, but my goal is to work in the space industry and, you know, work alongside astronauts and, you know, hopefully design rockets that take people to other planets and the moon, things like that.
That's cool, man. Space freaks me out, I'm not going to lie to you. Like, I think it's just so... You ever look up and be like, man, we're on a planet? You know?
I don't think it freaks me out so much. I think it's... I mean, I say I don't want to be an astronaut, but if someone offered me, you know, a week stay on the ISS, I would not hesitate. I would say yes straight away.
Like, are you going to space? If someone is like, hey, you trying to roll?
I think I would, but I think I would definitely pass out on the way there. I think I'd enjoy it when I get there. But I had the same thought today. I was in my astronomy class, and I was kind of just like, wow, we're just studying like random balls of gas that just like exist. And we kind of just like live on one. But, you know, I just thought it was silly.
It's trippy, man. Like, it's really one of those things. Like, we're so small. Like, in the big picture of it all, like, we are, this conversation is so small. But it is, it's a beauty in like the small interactions that we get to have. Anyway, right? How does then an elementary ed major and an aerospace major land on the same spring break trip to Alaska? So maybe can one of you just like talk to me about what the premise of the trip is and like kind of like what made you all want to do this in the first place?
I can talk about like the premise of the trip. Well, basically ASB Alternative Service Break is through the Student Leadership and Engagement Office at NC State, and they basically just have like, I think it's a little less than like 20 or so trips around the country or even in country that all focus on like a different area of service. So Alaska focused on education and working in Huna City Schools, which is like Southeast Alaska, like on those like string of islands. And yeah, but it's open for anyone to apply, which is why we happen to go on the same trip. So.
Yeah, so I think the trip is definitely education based. You know, for the majority of the time, 5 out of the 10 days, we are in schools, you know, running lessons. I mean, we're basically like substitute teachers for a week.
Honestly, yeah.
So I think it definitely is education based, but there is a lot of stuff outside of the education kind of focus that you do. You know, you do some things in Alaska, you go crabbing, and you get really involved in the culture of Alaska, and you learn a lot about the traditional Alaskan people. And for me, that's the part that drew me. You know, I'm not an education major. I do like kids and I've worked with kids in the past, but that's not what I study and that's not what I want my career to be. What really drew me to this trip was kind of the remoteness of it. You know, it's in the middle of nowhere, Alaska. It's such a small little city or town, I guess. And you really get ingrained in the culture and you learn so much about the Alaskan people. You learn their language and their dances and their games, things like that. So that's really why I chose it, which I think is kind of how, you know, we were able to end up on the same trip, because there's this education part, but also this really big cultural education part.
Yeah, I think I was kind of like the opposite, where I went in wanting to get that like education experience out of it. And I did get that, but I also got a lot of, like Bryce was saying, specifically about the culture and just like the native Alaskan people in general. Like you were saying, I think they said Huna community is about like 2,000 people, maybe less than that, something like that. So you are in like a very remote area, and it's just really interesting to be in a community where everybody knows everyone. And even our trip leader, Adam, who works in the SLE office, he, because he's been on this trip so many times, he knows everyone too. And so I don't know, it was really interesting to be in an area that values community so much, because I think that we don't necessarily get that in what they call like the lower 48 states. So yeah.
The lower 48 is hard. That's a that's a cool way to describe the rest of the country. So I guess like when you're in the classroom, what are some of the lessons that you are, I guess, teaching, or just like what is your day-to-day kind of like look like?
So I think it was different for everybody. Yeah, how many were there? Were 12 students on the trip with us, and I think it was different for pretty much everybody. So my class, we had to say, you know, what we had our specializations in. So I said science and math. So I was paired up with a fifth grade teacher, and her class was a little unique in the fact that she taught her students all the classes. They didn't move around like you would usually do in high school. And I told her what my major was, and you know, we had a long conversation. So she really wanted me to teach them about math and teach them about space. And one of the days we had this reading where we were just doing these readings so that they can do some comprehension activities, things like that. And it was about the International Space Station. And it actually turns out that these kids, I think there were only about 7 of them in the class, they had all of these questions about what space is. And they were asking me like what orbits are and can I fly to the sun? All these really interesting questions that an 11-year-old would have. And I mean, I'm taking a space flight class right now. So, I mean, I was in the perfect position to just do a whole lesson on what space exploration is and how that works. So Ms. Basinger, who was a teacher with me, she gave me an hour time slot one day and said, you know, do whatever you want. And I was able to tie it into their math lesson, because at the moment they're learning about circles and ellipses and, you know, the focus points of an ellipse and all that kind of stuff. And fortunately for us, all of our orbits are ellipses. So I was able to teach them about orbits of the sun and planets and satellites, but also teach them about ellipses so that they were able to learn it from their math class. So that was just one day. But, you know, on the other days, I would be helping them with their reading. They did a lot of reading about stories and Greek gods, things like that, and different religions. And then, yeah, I help them with math class also pretty much every day. They have this big state math test that they have to do. I don't know exactly when it is, but they pretty much just preparing to take that big state math test. So I was going over some of the practice problems with them on the whiteboard, like getting them to come up and do the solutions themselves and teaching them so that they were ready for that state test.
That's awesome.
Yeah, like Bryce mentioned already, like I think everyone's experience was different. Every day looked different, especially for elementary. I think the high school, because it's all one school, so I think the high school side had a more consistent, like, everyday schedule. I was with the kindergartners. There's only five of them. It was kind of hit or miss what we did every day. I mean, they're little. They're kind of just still learning, you know, foundational things. When I was there, we were focusing on writing stories and components of stories and, you know, what makes up a story, what are characters, what is setting, all that kind of stuff. And so when I was there, we mainly just read a lot, and I just read books with them. And they would just ask questions. And, you know, we, at the beginning of the week, kind of looked at a whole map, and we were like, okay, well, this is where I'm from, and I'm all the way across the country, and just like learning about things like that. I mean, they're just very curious. So we kind of just did whatever. They were really flexible. But most of the time when I was there, they were doing testing. So I would pop over to the music room because I put down that I really enjoyed music. And so I would help Miss Higgins, who is the music teacher, and she was prepping songs for their concert, which we actually got to see while we were there. But I kind of just helped out wherever. I was bouncing around a lot.
That's cool. Do you play an instrument?
I play my voice.
Love that. Love that. would you describe this school, I guess, like, so this is, you know, a service break trip, right? Would you describe the school as one that was like lacking resources, or I guess like, and maybe this isn't necessarily a question for you, but like, do you know how the partnership between us and the community there like kind of came to be, to the point where students are coming in to do like this work?
I don't exactly know how the partnership began. I would have to ask about that. But they said they've been doing the trip since 2007, so it's definitely been a while that we've been going back. I feel like they mentioned something about like two people knowing each other and deciding to make this partnership happen. I don't know, Bryce, if you could add on to this. I wouldn't really say they were lacking in resources. I think they were just lacking in like globalization, I guess, because their community is so isolated. They just don't really, like, if you talk to most of the kids, a lot of them are going to be like, I was born in Juneau. I've lived in Juneau my whole life. Like, I've never been out of the state. And so I think they just bring us in every year to kind of get that outside perspective.
Yeah, I think I would agree. They definitely aren't lacking in resources, for sure. I was in one of the classes with a high school photography class or something, and they were learning how to use, I think it's called Procreate. It's like an app on an iPad that you use for video editing. And each kid had like a brand new iPad, and they whipped out like six boxes of like brand new Apple pencils and all that kind of stuff. And the school, you know, provided all that. So, I mean, that's just a small example, but I definitely don't think that they were lacking in resources. But certainly, I think the purpose of us going is that globalization that you mentioned, AJ, is a lot of these kids, I don't know if you can even be born in Juneau. I think you have to be born in Juneau.
Oh, true. There's not a hospital. There's no, like, main hospital. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's true.
But yeah, I mean, it's so remote in Alaska, and specifically in Hoonah, you know, the only way to get there is by ferry or by a plane. You can't get there any other way. And it's so small. There really isn't any industry there. So I think if you grow up as a kid in Hoonah, unless someone comes and tells you, you know, of all these options, you think to yourself like, okay, I can work at like a grocery store, or I can be a fisherman or something like that. I don't really know what the typical trajectory for them is after school. And I think, I think for us going there, it really just teaches them like, hey, you can study aerospace engineering. You can become a teacher. We had one of the students do a really big genetics lesson. It's like, yeah, you can study genetics and be a doctor, you know, all these options. And the place where you can do all of these things and have all these resources for you is at university. So I think the main reason for us going there is advertising universities, not even NC State specifically, just going to university and how that opens doors for you. Because they have, in one of their hallways, they have this big wall of all these places where their graduates have gone, all the universities. And unfortunately, NC State's not there. We're hoping to get some pretty soon. But I think that's really the big pull of the reason why we go there, is to get them to go to university and, you know, kind of expand what they know.
A really big thing, because you were talking about like the trajectory, a lot of, like you said, like a lot of the kids specifically in high school, like they drop out before they even get to high school. And I think it's mainly like two things. I think at home, it's not really pushed to like go to school. Like your parents there aren't really saying like, you need to go to school every day. Like, I remember a teacher, I was in the music classroom, and Miss Higgins was like, yeah, we're lucky if we get this student even like once a year. Like, she just doesn't come in. And that was a child that was in like second grade, you know? And they mentioned, because a lot of kids, because they don't see a way out of whatever their situation is, they go and work at Icy Strait Point, which is like the big tourist attraction in Hoonah. That's like where all of the Alaskan cruises stop. And so this is like, I mean, it has pros and cons, because it's good. It brings in jobs for a lot of people that, you know, need the money. But at the same time, it's like, kids aren't going to school anymore, because they're like, oh, it's fine, I'll just work at ISP. And they kind of just don't really like care to get an education, because they don't see themselves leaving. Or even the kids that like do get out, they'll leave like sophomore year, and then they'll go to like boarding school in like Hoonah or in Juneau or Anchorage or something like that. So yeah, I agree. I think we were there mainly to just say like, hey, like you can leave, like you can, there are other things out there for you. You don't have to stay where you are. So
that's interesting. Cause I think, I mean, we often like hear it or like think about it in terms of like North Carolina, just like the people who, you know, and this for everywhere, like you stay where you are, right? Like you have an idea and a concept of like your neighborhood, the communities around you. And this is like probably more so the case for like rural communities, you know, and like this is what exists. And it's like the, I don't want to say the pressure, but I feel like there's like sometimes a pressure to stay and to like maintain. But then I think there's also like sometimes like a pressure to leave feeling like things are, I guess like better, like once you like get out of like the specific area, and like trying to like balance like leaving, not necessarily searching for, I guess like more, while like maintaining like a culture and like communal values, but like also understanding that like you have the options based on like, again, like the people that you encounter, like the things that you learn in the classroom. That's really interesting. And that's I've never thought of like a service break project in this light. So this is actually like very like enlightening for me. I guess like to wrap up, you all are back now. Welcome back. I have other questions about like the travel to Alaska itself. The concept of that like seems, how long is the flight? Or and how many flights?
Was it 5 hours to Seattle?
Yeah, it was three flights total.
2 hours to Juneau.
And then it's like 15 minutes to Hoonah.
Yeah.
Crazy.
And you take a, we took a seaplane from Juneau to Hoonah.
Yeah.
Because like the
small little plane.
Yeah, their airport is not big enough to hold like a whole commercial plane. So
it's like not even an airport, basically. It's just like a road.
It's just of. Like a.
But it was, the seaplane was amazing. I mean, you don't fly.
That was so cool.
I don't know what the exact. I think it's like 10,000 feet only. So you can see the mountains, and it's amazing seeing the Alaskan wildlife and just landscape that close.
That is awesome. So how do you all plan to apply what you've learned to the rest of your time at NC State, to your professions, your life? Like, what are you going to take from it?
So I think, yeah, like I somewhat mentioned it earlier, you know, education or I guess working in education wasn't really my main goal for the trip. So I wouldn't go so far as to say I didn't learn anything education-based, but that really wasn't my goal. So I think the main lesson that I got from the trip and my main takeaway from the trip was learning to appreciate the other cultures. And, you know, as an international student coming to America, you see Americans on TV and social media and you think they're all the same. And then you come to America and you realize, you know, I've only ever lived in North Carolina. So my view of America is North Carolina. And then you go to a place like Alaska and it's like, oh, these are Americans, but they are wildly different to the North Carolina people that I know back home. Mm. And even within North Carolina, it's like, you know, I have some friends from New York or places like Texas and it's like California. And it's like, man, you guys are all Americans, but you are just completely different people. And that's something that I think a lot of foreigners don't really understand until they come to America. So I think for me, being able to appreciate, yeah, in all 50 states, they're all American, but in pretty much every individual state, they are really different and they have such different cultures. And it's being able to appreciate, you know, the fact that they are still American, they have that common heritage, but they are still so different. And it's like, it's almost like a different country. To me, Alaska, I know it's a state, but in my head, it's a different country. I think I have a much greater appreciation for that now. So if I go to a new state, you know, something like California, I think I'm going to be able to see, you know, yes, you're still American, but it's still so different. It's still such a new experience instead of this is just one big America.
That's cool.
Yeah, I agree. I think I definitely, while we were there, I kept forgetting that we were, I mean, I only grew up in America, but even then I kept forgetting that we were still in America because the culture is so different and the native culture, like the native population is just so large there. It doesn't even, like, you would just think that it's another country because it just looks so different geographically as well. Like, you're surrounded by these like snowy mountains all the time and you're just like, whoa. But I think for me, I also took away the culture, but in a different way. I think I, like, going into it, I didn't know a lot about native culture, period. But it was just so interesting to learn the intricacies within just Tlingit native culture, because that's not even like all different native cultures. That's just one piece of like a much larger puzzle. And so I think for me, being an educator, being native and being indigenous is not something that is like widely taught, I think, in school. And so I think that that's something that I will take away for when I begin to teach and, you know, recognize those students that are indigenous, but, you know, are maybe hidden a little bit, or try and even incorporate some of that culture into my classroom. There's just so many customs. There's so many, basically just their entire way of life is just so different that, but you could almost say that it's, I don't know. There were just some things that I'm like, I would much rather do this that they do than, you know, keep doing what I do on a regular everyday basis. So I think just things like that. But yeah, mainly just recognizing Native and Indigenous people, I think, is really important. So
cool. Really cool. It sounds like a really cool trip. I'm gonna have to hit up Adam and be like, hey, if y'all need another, you know, chaperone or something, holler at me. Because I too would love to go visit Alaska and see what the kids is talking about. But thank y'all so much for joining us. And I will see you around. Thanks for joining us on this episode. If you enjoyed our conversation and want to hear more, be sure to subscribe and give us 5 stars on whatever platform you're listening on. If you're a prospective student and interested in learning more about the program, shoot us an email at goodnightscholarship@ncsu.edu. And remember, no matter what time of day you're tuning in, we always hope that you have a good night. I'm Anthony Olai Wright. Peace out.